All right, Mr. Hayes, how we doing?
Here we are. Let me
turn that off. We just heard, if you're just joining us, this is Let's Get Lost. We're here every single Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. We got a little bit different situation going on than my normal show. I'm just usually here in here by myself, hanging out, listening to records. But we got a whole caveat of people in here, including my friend, Mr. Henry Conerway III.
Hey, Joe.
One of our great jazz drummers here in town. He is got a show Sunday night here at the Green Room tributing the great Lewis Hayes, and we also have the great Lewis Hayes here with us. Mr. Lewis Hayes, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine.
Oh, this is cool, man. I've never done this, Mr. Hayes. I've never had a live on-air guest, so this is all new for me. We kind of winging it a little bit, but I think we just kind of talked about playing some cuts, talking about some cuts, and I threw on something. I was like, well, you know, Mr. Hayes played with my favorite pianist of all time, Mr. Phineas Newborn, and I play a lot of Phineas Newborn music up here, and World of Piano, does that ring a bell?
A big one. That was magnificent. I happened to be with Cannonball and Nat Attlee in the early 60s in California, in LA, and we got this call, Sam Jones and myself, the bassist, to make this recording date with Phineas. So the first evening we went to, the afternoon we went to the recording studio, and it was okay, but we didn't strike a groove on the highest level. So we just left it alone for that day. The next day we came back, and it was magic. It was marvelous.
Wow.
It's one of my favorite recordings of all time, Phineas Newborn. People should know more about him and his brother who played good guitar.
Calvin.
And after that.
Yeah, Calvin's my hero.
I made several dates with him just playing. And Phineas was a magnificent, on a high-level pianist. He used to tell me that he used to practice until his fingertips would bleed.
Wow. Mr. Hayes, were you living in Los Angeles at the time you made that?
No. I always lived from Detroit. I came from Detroit and moved to New York, and I've been in this area ever since, New York.
Okay, so were you, when you make an L.A. date, you were just on the road? You were with, obviously, you were with Cannonball at the time, correct?
Exactly right.
And so you just happened to be, you know, when y'all, I'm going to ask a couple questions that are more in the weeds, like behind the scenes stuff. Y'all just were on the road, and then you got this call like, hey, we need you to go make this L.A. date. Because I know Phineas at that time was living in Los Angeles.
Okay. I didn't know exactly where he was living.
Yeah.
And that was so long ago, I can't remember the details. I do not remember the details.
Right. But that probably wasn't uncommon. You would be on the road and could get a call for a record date, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
All kinds of different things could happen at any time.
Well, that's amazing. So that was you and your partner, your bass partner, Sam Jones, on that date, correct?
Exactly right.
You guys made
So many records.
Yes.
Right.
People enjoyed us as the feeling we got and the sound we got. So we did make a lot of different recording dates with a lot of magnificent musicians.
Before we move on, I want to just kind of quickly talk about that relationship. What do you think it was that you two had that was so, that people wanted to have a part of their record date? Someone like Phineas Newborn of that caliber. They were like, I want the Hayes Jones sound. I mean, what was it that you guys had developed in the Cannonball Adderley organization, or maybe even before? What was it? What was the sound that you had created, or is there a way to describe it?
Well, what happened was when Birdland 52nd Street was still doing things, it was one evening. We played a session there, and when the job was over, it was Book a Little Trumpet, who's also a magnificent trumpeter.
From Memphis.
Hank Mobley to the saxophone, Bobby Timmons piano, Sam Jones and myself. When the job was over, Sam approached me and said that Cannon was starting, he was with the Milesers, and he was wanting to put a band back together again. And what I have think when I think about it, at the time I was Horace Silver, who brought me to New York in 56, and I was very comfortable with Horace. But I thought about it, so I did make the decision to go with Cannon. And Sam and myself, we not only played well together, we were very close as two people. And we just had this feeling together. That's all it was to it. It's something that you can't explain.
You can't explain.
Sam and myself, we just had it.
You did. You had it. You had it. Man, you had it. If anyone did, you had it. Henry, do you have a thought about who we could? We were going to play another track. Do we want to go? He mentioned Horace.
Let's go to that first record date.
We're going to go to your first record date, and then we're going to definitely play some new music, and we're going to play some Lewis Hayes Group music. But we're gonna go back and listen to a little Horace Silver, if that's okay with you.
It's fine with me.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hayes. This is Tippin' from Six Pieces of Silver, featuring Lewis Hayes. Thank you. Tipping with Mr. Lewis Hayes. Tipping, of course, from Six Pieces of Silver. We've played this record many times on this show. The great Horace Silver with Doug Watkins on bass. The great Hank Mobley, Donald Byrd on trumpet. Hank Mobley, of course, on tenor saxophone. We have Henry Conway here live, and we have the great Lewis Hayes. So excited. Two great Detroit drummers, and Henry is going to be tributing Mr. Hayes this Sunday night at the Green Room here at Crosstown Concourse. And we were talking about Detroit. Let's talk about how do we get from Detroit to New York, Mr. Hayes? Or in fact, let's talk a little bit about maybe just quickly Detroit itself, the scene growing up, high school, maybe coming into just starting to work as a professional. What was that looking like for you?
Well, my father started me playing drums, and I had a cousin. His name was Clarence Stamps. He played around Detroit for some years, and he was the one who got me together with my rudiments and direction. Played the drums. He said a lot of things to me, and I learned a lot from Clarence. So that was the beginning. And then just being a person in Detroit and making up my mind on what direction I wanted to go in. And listening, when I first heard Charlie Parker, that solved that problem. And I started going that direction. Then I had friends that I played with and look, coming up in high school. But then there were so many magnificent musicians in Detroit, like Barry Harris and Kid Burrell and Thad Jones, Alvin Jones, and so many. So, Doug Waters and just so many great artists.
So your work in dates with them
before? No, I was too young. I knew of them. They didn't know me. I knew them.
Where were you working when you first started kind of hitting the scene in Detroit?
I just was playing in little clubs. Teenage clubs. Mm-hmm. And little school dances, little things that kids do when they, they just get started. I started out. I couldn't play any bars at 21. I'd be 21 to get into bars and drink. And I did do that a little bit. I mean, I was too young, but I did. It got away with it on occasion. But that's where it all started. And then it just took off from there. And I happened to Doug Watkins, the great bassist Doug Watkins and Donald Byrd, they were appearing with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. And they came back to Detroit for some reason. We got together one evening. So when he went back to New York, Horace Silver was leaving Art Blakey and was starting his own quintet. So they said something to Horace, and Horace called me in 1956. In August of 1956, I came to New York in 56 and joined the magnificent Horace Silver, and it started from there.
Wow. So it was Doug who kind of put you on to, hey, we got this Horace is starting a new group. Why don't you come to New York? And you already knew Doug. You had known him. Or were you kind of the young up and coming cat?
Yes, I was just in Detroit playing, doing different things. I did some things with Yusuf Batiste. And different things in Detroit.
And you were working. You had been working with Yusef before you moved to New York.
Yes, I had.
Oh wow! So did he come after you? I don't want to go on a tangent with him, but I just am. I'm a big fan of his as well. Did he come after you to New York?
I don't know when Yusef came to New York.
Right on. So, but there had already been a movement of Detroit musicians to New York before 50. You said 56, 57.
Yes. Oh, yes. New York. I mean, musicians were going back and forth.
Kenny Burrell.
America.
Yeah.
But in Detroit, yes. Big things were happening.
Well, another incredible relationship. And we talked a little bit about earlier, another organization that you worked with was, of course, the Great Cannonball Adderley organization. And I figured we'd go into a cut that Henry programmed for us, which is the Nancy Wilson Cannonball Adderley record, which was also, if I'm not mistaken, cut in Los Angeles at Capitol Records.
Yes.
And so before we play that cut, what had you cut in Capitol Records before this date, or do you remember what that was like going into that famous studio?
Well, at the time, it didn't affect me like that. We was going to make some history.
Right.
And that's all I was thinking. That's all I was thinking about.
You weren't even thinking about it.
Capitol Records.
Right, right. Okay. Well, we're going to play a cut. We're going to play Happy Talk featuring the great Lewis Hay. We're so excited to have you, man. Thank you so much for doing this. We're going to play Happy Talk from the Nancy Wilson Cannonball Adderley record featuring Lewis Hayes.
Happy talk, keep talking happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true? Talk about a moon floating in the sky, looking like a lily on a lake. Talk about a bird learning how to fly, making all the music he can make. Happy talk, keep talking a happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true? Talk about a star looking like a toy, peeking through the branches of a tree. Talk about a girl, talk about a boy, counting all the ripples on the sea. Happy talk, keep talking a happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream,
all right, the great Lewis Hayes, and that was Nancy Wilson featuring, of course, the Cannonball Adderley organization, and that was
Happy Talk.
And let me get my notes here. We got to talk about the musicians, of course. Cannonball Adderley, Nat Adderley, the great Sam Jones, and we talked about that relationship between you between you, Mr. Hayes, and Sam Jones. Joe Zawinul. And so Joe Zawinul, who you then worked with later, do you have any remembrance of that session at all? Anything in particular?
Yeah, it was very comfortable, and we didn't rehearse too much, because Cannonball did not rehearse not too much at all, the band.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was going to ask you. Go ahead.
We just came together and in the studio, put arrangements together, and went for it. And it turned out the feeling was just magnificent. Mm,
yes, it was.
It's a magnificent. Those arrangements, were those head arrangements? Were those charts? Do you remember typical Cannonball dates? Were they just sort of talked over, the tunes?
We just talked them over.
Talked them over. That's the best way to do it. Amazing. I could talk to you about that session all day long. Mr. Hayes, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about a date you did for Mr. Benny Green record date you did on Blue Note called Back on the Scene. We're going to feature a cut by Melba Liston, Melba's Mood. Blue Note, though, those sessions, you did, if, according to you know what I've read, is you there were rehearsals for those Blue Note sessions. Is that correct, typically?
You're correct.
So I've heard that you would get a day before the record date just to kind of square away your material.
Yes, we rehearsed for a few hours before the day before.
But that was sort of, was that unique to Blue Note?
Yes, no. The Blue Note did that. All of the record companies, they didn't have that.
Like Prestige, Prestige probably didn't. I heard.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think
mm-hmm. so. All right, so we're gonna this cut features Charlie Rouse on tenor saxophone, one of my favorites, who of course was very famous with his relationship with Thelonious Monk. George Tucker on bass. You made quite a few records with Mr. Tucker, is that correct? Bass player.
I'm not so sure.
You're not so sure.
George Tucker and myself, we had a magnificent feeling together as friends.
That's so great. Well, before we play the cut, that is important to have that personal relationship, that friendliness, in order to transfer that spirit onto the bandstand. Is that not correct?
You're right.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, look, let's let the music speak for itself. We're gonna do, this is Melba's Mood. Melba Liston, did you know Melba Liston? Were you familiar with Melba?
I knew her.
Yeah.
On a certain level, not on a real personal level, but we did know each other. Yes, we did.
Great arranger.
She was appearing with Dizzy Gillespie's orchestra when I first met her.
Oh, okay.
I think it's fantastic. If I might just ask a quick
please,
question,
please, please.
I think it's fantastic that you all chose to perform the music of a black woman. How did that come to be a part of the repertoire? Who was instrumental in making sure that piece made the record?
Mr. Hayes, did you hear that? Did
yes.
you hear? Did you hear Henry mentioned? He had a question for you.
One more time.
I think it's fantastic that you all featured the music of a black woman on that date. Who was instrumental in making sure that piece made the record?
I'm gonna say to you, I've made so many recording dates till I can't recall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was 1958. This was a little while ago.
Until I hear the music, I don't remember the date.
let's listen.
Let's listen to the music, and maybe it'll jog your memory. Okay, this is Melba's Mood. Man, what a groove, Mr. Hayes.
Thank you very much. That was brand new to me. I'm glad you
you don't remember that, huh?
No, I do not remember it.
That is,
I'm telling you the truth. I don't remember.
It's okay. That's all right. That's all right.
Melba, she was magnificent. I'm just glad to have done something, made some history with Melba. Mm-hmm. Magnificent.
Yes, and can you? I mean, even though you said you don't necessarily remember the date per se, can you say something about that kind of beat you were demonstrating on that cut, that groove that you were? I mean, that without that beat, that track just doesn't work. I mean, it's everything is that feeling.
Well, that's just something that they called, I would say, a rumba.
Okay.
I learned to play that as a kid from my cousin Clarence Stamps. But those dates, that's when I was 19 to 20, 21 years old. I was the beginning of my New York history. But this, you learn to play as a kid. I learned to play to say, this is a samba. That's different. This is a rumba.
Right.
This is a different things like that. You need to know those things because it's a different way of approaching the drums and those things that are very important as a drummer that you need to know to get you through this. People writing these magnificent compositions, you don't need to know the different time signatures that you can use.
While we're still on the subject of drums and being a drummer, can you tell us anything about that famous ride cymbal beat of yours? You know, I've been studying that and trying to get that into my spirit as much as possible. I feel like there's a real feeling from those of us who come from Detroit. Did you establish your ride cymbal beat in Detroit or did you get it in New York? How'd you get to it?
Well, first thing I would say, when I was a certain age, 12, 13 or something, my cousin one day, he said to me, he said, you want to play the drums? I said, yes. He said, okay. He said, when you look out in the audience and you don't see anybody patting their feet, you ain't playing shit.
Huh, there you go.
So that is one thing that was very important to me, feeling and playing time. Coming from people like Papa Joe and who was very important in my life, who came to New York with Count Basie, Joe Jones, and playing the bass drum a little more profile, playing the cymbal beat like Kenny Clarke. I listened to Kenny Clarke and Percy Heath, mm-hmm. and that direction that they were feeling and the way that they the flow, the feeling they had. And I enjoyed that feeling that they had. So I just took it from there. And it's a matter of, it's in your body. Whatever comes out, you can't do anything about that. You practice and you warm up and you practice. And whoever you are when you hit the stage, whoever you are comes out. And other people can see who you are when you once you come up on stage and start appearing and playing. So that's just something that I can't explain. I just started playing the cymbal beat, and that's what I have.
Yes, sir.
We're glad you did, because it makes us feel so good when you do it, Mr. Hayes. We're going to move on because we want to play some of your records as a leader. Before we get in, we're going to play something from the Lewis Hayes group. I did want to ask you this before I move on. You played with all these great musicians and these great masters, but then at some point you start leading groups. And I wanted to ask you, was there a particular band leader that you used as a blueprint for your own leadership? Or maybe it was multiple people or band leaders that you worked with. You worked with a lot. Can you think it was it Cannonball or Mr. Silver or when you were going into starting to form your own groups, who were you using as a sort of as a model, I should say, or if there was anyone maybe?
Now, I didn't use anyone.
You didn't use anybody. Okay.
I just was. Everyone that I played with had an effect on me.
Right.
One way or the other. I didn't think about that part. I just was necessary for me at that time in life to start a band myself. It was playing with another band leader was not the right direction for me to go in at that time. So it was
time to do your thing.
That exactly right. So I just started.
Do you find leading bands? I would think that leading a band from the drums would be, there's a lot of pros to that, being the drums are so, have such an impact on the dynamics of a band, the tempo of the band, the feel of a band. Was that a challenge for you to lead from that chair, or was it natural, easy?
It's very easy, playing the drums, you are basically the leader anyway.
Right, that's them. Right.
Tell him, Mr. Hayes.
I know it.
It's just the way that you want to approach it. But I really have enjoyed the artists, the magnificent musicians who have helped me, and we have enjoyed our lives and the history we've made on this magnificent art, for this big magnificent art form I've been able to enjoy all my life. All of them. Enjoyed it all.
We're going to play some music from a record you made, believe in 1979 on the Griffin label. This is from your Variety Is the Spice. We're going to hear Marvin Gaye's classic What's Going On, featuring Frank Stroger and Harold Mayburn from right here in Memphis. And we'll listen to that, and hopefully we can talk about it a little bit. What's going on? We'll be right back. Wow. Mr.
Yes,
Hay.
I'm very happy to hear you that you played that. That was a quartet. That was a very powerful quartet.
Very powerful.
And they were so close, Nasty, coming up together in Memphis. And we had a very powerful group. I wish would love for it to stay together for a long period of time. We played together and we appeared together a lot in Europe. Not that much in America, but that group should have been on a higher level for us, people knowing about it across the world, because it was a very strong unit. And I'm glad that you played it, and I enjoyed those two guys tremendously. We had a magnificent time.
Well, Mr. Hayes, I agree with you 100%. And Henry programmed that, but I had heard y'all's arrangement of that cut. I was like, well, I've heard Mabes and Strozier and Mr. Hayes do What's Going On. But I realized it was on Frank's record of titled on Steeplechase, What's Going On. So I don't know if you remember, but y'all cut that arrangement on another record. And it's
I remember it.
And it's a little different. It's a little faster. It's a little more frenetic. And I had never heard this version. This version, I think I might like a little better. We've played the other version on this radio station, as a matter of fact. What was it about? Henry wanted me to ask you about Mayburn. When did you meet him, or what was the connection between you two?
Well, we met, I don't know how we met or when we met.
Right.
But, and Frank Strozier, I don't, the same thing. We came together as they knew each other all the time.
Yeah, they go back.
How I came into play with them, we just knew each other. Some way we came together and put this quartet together. I never thought about how we met, but it really worked. And we were together for, I don't know how long it was, but it was a long period of time, you know.
Well, Mr. Mayburn has a huge impact as an educator, of course. I have a lot of friends in my age group that studied with him. I got to spend a little bit of time with him, just hanging out with him. And then he would come down to Memphis, and he would come down and play. What was it about his playing that attracted you or that intrigued you about collaborating, maybe doing something in a group context?
We just came together. No one talked it over.
No, I mean, him musically, what was it maybe?
He had the energy.
Energy.
Him and Frank had the connection.
Right.
And we just came together, and it was just felt good, and it just came together, and we just formed a group.
Rest is history.
Things just happened.
Right.
It wasn't a plan.
Wasn't a plan.
This just came together, and we just started playing together, as musicians, we just came together, started playing, and it felt good, and we kept it.
This was the only recording under your leadership that y'all made, as you recall?
I'm not sure.
Okay. We could look it up, maybe.
I think we did some other things, but I can't.
Well, you definitely recorded under Frank Strozier's name on What's Going On is the name of the record on Steeplechase, and you're on that because I played it on this very show.
Okay.
Let's play some of your more current music. We're going to play something from 2023, the Lewis Hayes Exactly Right. We're going to play the title. What does Exactly Right come from?
That just is a saying.
That's your little saying.
Somebody was just speaking and you say something, you say exactly right.
Right. Is this a composition of yours?
I think so. I think it is. Is that a composition of mine? Exactly right. Yes, yes.
And do you write from the piano, I'm assuming?
No.
So you just sing melodies?
I write from, it just comes to my, comes in my head.
There you go.
There you go.
And it just happens like that.
And then you communicate that to the musicians? Sing a melody?
Especially to the pianist.
To the pianist. And the pianist on this record is David Hazeltine.
Yes,
one of the one of New York's finest.
Yes, exactly right.
That's right.
Exactly right.
Okay.
I love
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
I love it.
All right, let's play. Let's hear a little bit of Exactly Right, and we're winding down, and we'll let you go. But let's hear a little bit of Exactly Right from Lewis Hayes' 2023 album of the same title, Exactly Right. Exactly right.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes, yes. I enjoyed it.
You sound fantastic on that. So that's Exactly Right from 2023. And that was, of course, Lewis Hayes' group, Dezron Douglas on bass, Abraham Burton on tenor saxophone, the great Steve Nelson on vibes, great David Hazeltine on piano. You got any, when you got another gig? When y'all working again? When's the next date, Mr. Hayes?
We're going to
the 23rd and
24th,
Seattle.
23rd
to Seattle the next week.
23rd, 24th Seattle. Of Seattle at the
was
it? What are y'all playing?
Jazz Alley.
Jazz Alley. I've been there. That's a nice room.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Hayes, we appreciate this. I can't thank you enough for doing this. It means a lot.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me and loving the music as I do. Keep swinging, playing the drums. That's our lives.
Yes, it is.
And Mr. Henry Conaway, also a great Detroit musician, is going to be honoring you, Mr. Hayes, this Sunday night at the
fantastic.
At the Green Room, playing the music of Lewis Hayes.
All right.
And that's going to feature a young altoist, Kenny Reed, young trumpet man, Terry Washington, one of our great pianists here in Memphis, Alvy Gavon on piano, Logan Clark on bass, and fine vocalist Patrice Williamson will be singing. And that's at 7:30?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Six early. O'clock. It's early. Yes, early. Get there early. Sunday night, Green Room, 6 o'clock. Don't miss it. Mr. Hayes, thank you so much, and we'll hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
You all.
Hey, don't go away because we're going
to.
Melody. Exactly right.
We don't go yet because we want to take a little photo and talk to you off air real quick before you go.
Okay.
All right.